Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's new daily show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on the facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to local officials and experts on COVID-19 and community actions related to it. If you have questions for our guests, please email them to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. Audio from each day's program will be posted on the website.
And good morning. Thank you for tuning into today's program. We're going to be dealing with legal issues today, landlord-tenant issues, employment issues, finance, and a whole plethora of other things. We have a couple of lawyers on the line from Alaska Legal Services here to help you understand some of the issues and the help that may be available to you if you have questions or you have issues. If you have questions, please email lowdown@kmxt.org or call 486-3181, and we will try and get you an answer before the end of the show. Today from Anchorage, we have Nicole Nelson from Alaska Legal Services and Kelsey Eggert from Juneau from Alaska Legal Services. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for coming on today. Tell us a little bit about what you do. Nicole, you want to tell us a little bit about what your position is up there in Anchorage and what kind of cases you generally work with?
Sure. So I'm the executive director of Alaska Legal Services, and I'm also a lawyer. So I have been working with Alaska Legal Services for about 22 years. And over the course of that time, I have sort of run the gambit of all sorts of civil cases for low-income people. So housing, domestic violence, public benefits, just the whole slew of civil cases I've worked on through the course of my career. But right now I proudly serve as the executive director of the organization.
Okay. So Alaska Legal Services has been around in Alaska for many, many years, and are you still strong and vibrant?
We are. We've been here for over 50 years. And so thanks to the great community support that we have as a nonprofit, we've continued to grow and to be strongly serving our communities and being there to help those who don't have access or can't afford an attorney.
So primarily, what's the focus of Alaska Legal Services? What kind of legal services do you customarily offer to the general community?
We help people who can't afford an attorney on civil cases. So civil cases, a lot of people don't understand what a civil legal need is as opposed to a criminal legal need. And a civil case are sort of those areas where it's just everything that's not criminal. And they can encompass those things that, you know, really impact people's daily needs. It's protecting your housing if you have a landlord-tenant issue. It's if you have a family law dispute, if you're going to court because you need a divorce or custody of your kids or domestic violence. It comes up also sometimes elders or other people have difficulties accessing public benefits programs like Social Security or veterans benefits or food stamps or SNAP programs. And so that's something that we can help with, but people often don't think of it as a legal issue. We also help people who have debts. There are laws that consumer protection laws that protect consumers from debt collectors harassing them. And so that's an area that we also help people to make sure that they, again, we're just looking at those areas where we're trying to protect people's health and stability and their livelihoods.
Okay. So you work in state court and federal court?
We do. And also in administrative proceedings too.
So you have an army of lawyers in selected communities around the state. And one of those here in Kodiak used to be Kelsey, who's now in Juneau, Right. So, Kelsey, you've jumped ship and you're down in the Capitol now and doing work for Alaska Legal Services down there. What primarily do you do?
Other than Miss Kodiak, I I work in a partnership with AWARE, which is the local domestic violence shelter. So all of my clients are domestic violence or sexual assault victims.
Is that a pretty big, are you busy?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a stupid question. how since, I mean, you're a lawyer. You're usually sitting in an office waiting for a client to come in and running back and forth to court. How has your world changed since the pandemic has arrived? lawyers who can talk. Amazing.
Yes. So I do want to speak over Kelsey. So what I would say is, it's a whole different ball game for us at Alaska Legal Services. We are used to having clients in our physical offices daily, in and out, nonstop. And since the pandemic, we are, abiding all of the health mandates that have been issued. And even though we are a critical, an essential service, so we're still operating, we have closed our physical offices to the public. And so now we're talking with our clients over the phone. We're trying to connect with them in different ways. And so that's presented, it's a whole new ball game. And, a lot of our attorneys across the state too have kids and they're working from home and, doing the same things that a lot of other people are doing right now too, which is trying to, manage all the pandemic life, I guess.
Yeah. So it must be really tough though. I mean, because you have a client base that's need based, right? So a lot of times they're not technologically up to snuff to be able to communicate with you, are they?
Right. That's accurate. And that's a real worry of ours. We are concerned about, the folks that are going to fall through the cracks and not be able to reach us or get a hold of us. And so we have great concerns about that. One thing I will say, though, is that over the course of the 50 years plus that Alaska Legal Services has been in business, we've become really expert at helping people remotely and clients that we haven't been able to see. So for instance, last year we helped about 7,000 people statewide. And of those people we served, we did that in 140 different communities. And most of those people, we didn't see them. We maintained a good relationship with our clients. We were able to help them and to get the relief that they needed. But we didn't see them physically in our offices. So we do have some experience in doing that, but we are of course worried about those who don't have access to technology to get a hold of us. But again, if you've got a phone, you can reach us.
Right.
And we have an 800 number.
And you have online resources as well. I mean,
we do.
So the court system itself has changed though. And there's, there's a lot of times where personal appearance is necessary. Signing documents is necessary. How do you get the day-to-day thing done?
Sure. And so, Kelsey, do you want to speak to this?
yeah. So, and it also depends a little bit on the specific court. But for the most part, courts are accepting fax and email filing. There are certain issues, right? So if you're starting a new case, or if you do need to go in and have it sign a document in front of someone, that is still happening. And they ask that if you are sick, you don't go into the courthouse. Some courts have a drop box for filing things, dropping them off. You can also mail things in.
And I would say too, that the court system, I would say, has been really responsive and has really sort of bending over backwards to make sure that they can keep our communities safe and our experience has been, there's been really forward thinking about how they can protect the community and still move forward with the things that need to happen. So again, they've been great about allowing telephonic appearances. and also just limiting interaction, in-person interaction in the court system.
Yeah, and also things, you know, change kind of every day in this world. And so what I do when I don't know is I call our local court. And so that's a great, great option if you're unsure.
Things are changing all the time with all the laws that are being passed and changed. I mean, you're probably on a high learning curve too, isn't it? Every day you have to kind of keep up with what the new changes are.
Absolutely. The laws are changing just so rapidly. And, you know, there's sort of this, there are federal laws that are changing. There's state laws that have changed recently. And then also on the municipal level and local level, people are implementing ordinances. And then also all of the different institutions. So for instance, the court system or the Department of Health and Human Services. Again, the rules, their ways of operating are changing really rapidly too. So it's a lot to keep updated on. And again, I'll mention we have our website, which is www.alaskalawhelp.org. And we have a section on that website that has COVID-19 resources. And we are updating those daily. And so when we get anyone calls to ask us a question, we figure that at least there are probably a dozen more people in the community that have that same question. So we take time to write down the answer and put it up on our on that resource page for folks. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, where again, we're just trying to get good information out to the community, but it's changing so quickly that we're updating that and changing our posts, our blog posts, like sometimes a couple of times a day. So.
Could you give me that address again for the folks out there who may be interested in knowing where that helpline is?
Sure. It's www.alaskalawhelp.org.
So normally the folks that already have access to a lawyer, you know, are going to probably try and figure out where their lawyer's at and have a conference call with them. But for somebody that wants general information, would you direct them to one of your offices first, or would you direct them to a website to try and get some information?
Well, so a couple of things. I would say, and everybody's welcome to go to our website to and go through it and to see if the question that we have, you know, the question that they have has been answered. And then you could also call our hotline number, which is 1-888-478-2572. But again, we're an application-based program. So when you call our hotline, we're going to ask you some questions about your income eligibility to make sure that you qualify for our services before getting passed along. So if, you know, you think that you might be over income for our services, then probably, you know, head to the website first, but it doesn't hurt to give us a call.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the big categories that you're dealing with right now. I think for most people with what's happened is set off their income stream. You know, they're out of a job or they're not making as much money as they were. And debt relief seems to be the primary thing that's on a lot of people's mind right now. How what's available out there and how can you help?
Sure. So again, on the federal level, both on the federal level and the state level, our legislators and our you know, our Congress folks have changed laws recently to help give some relief to people who are recently out of work and are struggling to pay their bills. And so a couple of things that people should know about if you're a renter. So if you're a renter, there are a couple of different laws that passed recently that are supposed to help give you some relief if you are having trouble struggling to pay your rent right now. First off, Senate Bill 246 was a state law that was signed into law last week. And it provides relief, sort of it prevents a landlord from evicting a tenant who for non-payment of rent while the emergency health declaration is in place or through June 30th. So whichever comes first. So that's if you're a renter. Also, simultaneously, the court system, because they're operating on a limited basis, is not currently hearing what's FED hearings, and those are eviction hearings for non-payment of rent. And so those have been stalled. And the idea behind this is that, you know, we really don't want people becoming homeless during a pandemic, because that's not going to be, you know, create a healthy situation for any of us. Also, on the federal level, under the CARES Act, which was recently passed, many of the rental programs, if you live in a subsidized housing program, and Kelsey can talk a little bit about her experience in what kind of housing is probably available in Kodiak. But those, there have been some suspension of, again, your rent, the late fees, and in their ability to evict you if you're in one of these subsidized housing programs. So again, if you're on the rental side of things, right now, it doesn't alleviate your long-term ability to have to pay this rent back, but it will keep you from getting, these protections keep you from getting evicted immediately and losing your housing right now. We also have on our website, it doesn't alleviate your responsibility for ultimately owing this back rent, you're going to need to talk to your landlord to come up with an agreement, some way to, a solution to that, to pay your back rent once these emergency measures are lifted. And we have a form there on our website that you can work with your landlord to talk about a repayment plan. So once the crisis is over with. But Kelsey, do you have any thoughts about the what the local housing stock is in Kodiak?
Yeah, so most folks will probably be in kind of private housing, but if to the extent that they are with Kodiak Island Housing Authority, most of those programs would be covered, so have the longer protections in place.
So,
and those go through July 25th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Through July 25th. So somebody who's in that housing and completely out of a job right now, they're waiting for unemployment benefits to kick in, and at the end of the emergency period or after July, then they're faced with a balloon payment or some sort of a lengthening. So they're still going to be responsible for paying the funds, but do you foresee some sort of protection coming so that it's not a balloon payment, that they're going to force some sort of negotiation to draw it out while people sort of recover their finances?
So I don't know how to predict what's coming. I mean, I think that would be the best way to go. It would be a really unfortunate circumstance, I think, if we ended up having a whole bunch of just delaying a lot of people becoming homeless after 3 months. So right now we do have a form that can help people negotiate with landlords so that they can come up with a repayment plan. But I'm not aware of any current legislation that's moving that would force that it's going to force the hands of landlords to accept that.
Okay.
So I do think that, you know, ultimately we as a society don't want a whole bunch of new homeless people. I think that that is just, you know, going to create further crisis. And one thing I would also say too, that homeowners, if you have a mortgage and you're having difficulty, the difficulty making your mortgage payments, and maybe landlords are in that situation, there are protections too that have suspended mortgage payments during this same time. And so again, you can call your bank and talk with your mortgage, the bank that holds your mortgage, but there are protections under the acts too for those who cannot make their mortgage payments during this time.
So it's the same thing, though. Are they given until the emergency order is over, until July, to have their mortgage suspended?
They can have their mortgage suspended, but it doesn't change my understanding. And again, this is a new law. They're coming out quickly. But yeah. It doesn't relieve your obligation to pay, but it's going to just sort of push it out. So you wouldn't have to make those payments during those months, but it would just extend the life of your mortgage. I would think the way that it's going to work is it will extend the life of your mortgage just another 3 months down the road, but it would suspend your obligation to pay it during these 3 months.
So I would imagine that maybe a significant portion of the work that you do is landlord-tenant related.
That's a fair amount, yes. We do a lot of landlord-tenant work. We also do a lot of domestic violence. We're the largest provider of services for victims of domestic violence and survivors of sexual assault in the state. And then also we work with seniors and elders. So about 30% of our cases statewide are addressing the legal needs of seniors.
Okay. Well, how are you being positively affected then for landlord-tenant issues if everything's been suspended pretty much for 3 months?
Well, I think that they've been suspended for 3 months, but people have so many questions and, you know, it's really just suspending their evictions for non-payment of rent. And typically that's not an area where Alaska Legal Services, if you don't pay your rent, you may just end up getting evicted. Yeah. And people can get evicted for other sorts of things. And so that's usually, those areas are still moving forward.
So you
can get evicted for, you know, all the other reasons that you could get evicted for.
Okay, so from a landlord's point of view, then they still are retaining rights to get rid of a tenant if there's issues other than non-payment.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. You touched on it a little bit there, Kelsey. We've been hearing from a number of people that have been into the program about the fear about domestic violence increasing during the pandemic. And you had a relationship with Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, and now all of your work down there in Juneau seems to be focused on that. What are we seeing throughout the state, and what kind of resources are available to help people that are in that situation?
Yeah, so there has been a lot of fear in Alaska about a rise in domestic violence. So it's happened in other states, and it wasn't happening just yet in Juneau, and it sounds like maybe it's still coming in Kodiak, but there seems to be a timeline, and we've now seen an uptick in Juneau, in which after extended confinement in this very stressful situation in which the whole world has changed, there is an increase in domestic violence. So and unfortunately, it's also a lot harder to get help at the moment. So if you're confined with your abuser and they're not leaving, how do you call a low resource to get help or information? So I know something that we've seen here is, you know, someone has to call when abuser goes out to the grocery store to get food, or abuser still working half days because they're in an essential service. So they have to call in a very brief window, and we have to work with them to that extent. But what we found in Juneau is just making sure people know that there are multiple ways to contact these local resources. So, and also people need to know that while the courts are operating on a limited basis right now, they are still hearing domestic violence protective orders. So you can still get a protective order at this time with limited court action. So in Kodiak, you mentioned KWRCC, they are still operating. There are some limitations, but if you need to call them, their number is 486-6171. You can also go online, and they do have an online contact form. So if email feels safe to you right now, you can go to kwrcc.org and contact them that way if your abuser doesn't have access to your email account. And just so you're aware, their website has a safe exit button. So if you're on the website, abuser comes into the room, you can hit that safe exit and it'll take you to, I think, Google. So they won't see that you've been looking, you know, there's a trail in your technology web browsing history, but they won't immediately see that that's what you've been looking at. There's also a national domestic violence hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. So that spells out SAFE. So 1-800-799-SAFE. And those calls are all free and confidential. So it's a more complicated world right now, and domestic violence is difficult to deal with. But there are, the best I can do is give you the resources. So those are the places you can go.
So what is the, what steps are taken then? I mean, from your office, if somebody comes in with a report of domestic violence or somebody calls and gets to you, how does it get processed and how do you safely get the people apart?
Right. So typically when someone comes into our office, they already have what's called a short-term or 20-day protective order, because typically someone like KWRCC or another community partner or the police help people file their initial petition. And those petitions can be granted without a court hearing, and they're granted without hearing from the other party if there's enough evidence of domestic violence. So someone doesn't need to worry about having to go to or call into a court hearing with their abuser at that first initial step. And then from there, the court has to schedule a long-term protective order hearing within 20 days of the date of that order. So that's typically where our office is involved, mostly because we have those community partners, but we can help with the short-term order as well. And those protective orders can do things like tell your abuser that they cannot be in your residence. So it's difficult now because where do they go? But if you get a 20-day protective order, it's going to mean, usually law enforcement helping you get that person out of your home. And that gives you 20 days of safety. At the long-term hearing, the court will hear from both sides. And you have to present evidence, which is a little tricky right now because everything's telephonic. But from there, the court can grant a full year-long protective order if they see enough evidence.
So what do you mean when you say there's an uptick? I mean, if you're seeing trends and you're seeing changes in behavior in Juneau already, I'm assuming it's like the rest of the, watching the wave of how cases increase in regard to the virus itself. And that kind of a wave sort of exists down south already. Now you're on that upward climb in Juneau. So what does that mean to your community as to how many more cases you're expecting to see? And if we haven't seen it in Kodiak yet, what does that mean for our community?
So unfortunately, I don't have firm numbers, but right, we looked at the lower 48, kind of what their domestic violence shelters were seeing. And we spent kind of 2 weeks prepping and weren't necessarily seeing it. Last week in a conversation with community partner here, which is Aware, their shelter has gotten busier in the last week. So, can't say for sure that it's gonna keep going up, but so far it seems like, after a certain time window, we are seeing an increased level of domestic violence. I'm not sure how high it'll get, but we're preparing as if it's going to kind of significantly increase over the next couple of weeks.
So what can the community do to prepare or to assist folks that are in an at-risk situation? How can the community assist in the process so that maybe you keep the curve down?
One thing that I often tell clients if they're starting to worry about domestic violence but don't necessarily have a case is to, a lot of the National Center on Domestic Violence has a safety plan. So we come up with safety plans of, have a person that you can text a certain word and they know that you're in trouble and they can, maybe call the police for you. Have a person who you know you can go to and stay on their couch for a bit if you're really afraid. If you have someone in your life that you know has been a victim of domestic violence or, suspect might be, you can check in with them. You don't have to ask them if there's been domestic violence, but check in with them. So trying to have kind of it's difficult to do, but have a basic plan for what you're going to do if the stress and confinement does lead to an explosion of anger. And you know, I tell people all the time, if you feel really unsafe, call 911.
So the primary driver in this is the stress because of the confinement. Is that fair to say? I mean, we're going to see more incidents of domestic violence just because of the stress involved. And now you're maybe in a situation where you're in a confined space with a potentially abusive partner for long periods of time.
Yeah, so domestic violence happens for a variety of reasons, but that's the theory. In COVID-19, the stress is going to trigger more violence.
Right. Now, are you seeing? I've never talked to anybody about it. I know that there's opportunistic crime that happens during pandemics. Is sexual assault one of them?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, I'd being on the ground and dealing with victims, I didn't know whether your caseload is going to increase because, you know, there's more sexual assault happening. I would hope that if everybody's hunkered down, that maybe it wouldn't. Okay, let's morph into something that's a little different. Paying bills, you know, for the average person that doesn't have the income stream they had before, what kind of resources are available to try and help people out through a time when they don't have enough money to pay for things?
Sure. So right now, like I said, there have been some good some legislation that's passed that's helpful, that should be helpful for those who are struggling right now to pay rent or their mortgage payments. Also, right now, a number of credit card companies have been willing to defer payments for those affected by COVID-19. And they've also, some will let you miss one payment without a late fee. So the advice that we would give to folks is really get a hold of, you need to make contact if you are unable to pay your bills. Reach out to, you know, if you have a mortgage, reach out to the bank that holds your mortgage and let them know that you're struggling and ask for forbearance, ask for a deferred payment, ask them to waive payments. Or waive any late fees. And then the same goes also with cell phone companies. So again, the first step would be to reach out to the businesses that you are indebted to and ask them for what relief they have available. Now, if it gets to the point where you just, you know, you've made all the contacts you can make and there isn't that relief in sight, people really need to think about what the order of priority of which they're going to pay their bills. And again, they should make sure that if your income has been reduced, the things that you want to make sure get paid first are things like your utilities, your rent or your mortgage, so you stay housed and that you have heat and water and food. And then, and child support should be paid first before paying your credit cards. So the credit cards debt should be the last thing that gets paid if you're ordering, if you're prioritizing your bills. You have to prioritize your bills. And one thing that people should really be wary of, too, there are a number of debt settlement companies that are advertising services out there. And a lot of these debt settlement companies are really scams. And so consumers really need to be very careful about those. I will say that there are some nonprofits that do a good job to help consumers repay debt. But there are a number of those debt settlement companies that are really, they're scams. And so you should, do a lot of research before you before you agree to any debt settlement arrangement with a company. Especially be wary of those that are asking for thousands of dollars up front to settle the claims. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you are just not able to catch up and you're not able to reach an agreement with your debt collectors, at some point you may need to consider filing for bankruptcy. But that can happen a little ways down the road. Right now, bankruptcy is something that you file in the federal court. And again, courts have limited functionality at this point. Bankruptcy proceedings are probably not going to be seen as an emergency proceeding right now.
So how do you tell? I mean, there's an explosion of things all over the internet about these are services that are available to you. This is a new product that's going to save your life. Is there a better place to go if you're thinking debt consolidation than another place? I mean, how do you know is there a trustworthy source that you can go to that has a long track record without advertising specifically for somebody? You know, is there a state agency? Is there a federal organization that deals with debt consolidation?
So there is not to my knowledge, there is not a state or a federal agency that deals with debt consolidation. There are consumer protection. There's the Consumer Protection Bureau on the federal level, and then the state also has a consumer protection section of the Attorney General's office. But neither of those offer debt consolidation services. I'm not in a position to give a recommendation about a trusted source for debt consolidation. What I will say is that there are a number of scams out there. So you should, people should think very carefully before, going through any company or paying any money to have your debts consolidated. That there are avenues that you can reach an agreement with the people that you owe your debts to directly. And so that would be a better option than paying a third party to help negotiate down your debts. Kelsey, do you have anything to add to that?
I don't think so. Okay. You got it.
Okay. There used to be through the Better Business Bureau, or imagine through the AG's office or something, complaints that were filed. Mm-hmm. Is there a way for the average person to research through one of those organizations whether or not somebody offering services is trustworthy or not?
Yeah, so to my knowledge, I think that most of the Better Business Bureau and other agencies, they take complaints and may give you that information, but I don't think that I have not seen them recommending a particular source,
okay,
a particular agency. I think that they will give warnings about scams that are cropping up and try to, sort of warn people from those, but I'm not aware that they're giving recommendations.
Okay. How far down the hole do you need to, you feel you need to go before you consider bankruptcy? And how long do you have to wait to stave that off? Should you wait as long as possible to go down that road, or are there advantages to bankruptcy that will get you out of what you're in?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. And so I don't think I'm going to be able to give you a satisfactory answer to it. One thing I will say that most bankruptcies, you'll need to get a private. So bankruptcy oftentimes doesn't make a lot of sense for people who are living on the margins. It might give you a peace of mind, but a lot of times people living on the margins, they're exempt from debt collectors garnishing their wages because of the limits. And so they don't have a lot to gain by going through bankruptcy except for peace of mind. So that's really not the area that that Alaska Legal Services deals with on a large scale. We do have private attorneys and pro bono attorneys that help take on cases in those few circumstances where it does make sense for those who are really living on the margins. But for those people who are where it might make sense, again, it's going to cost you around $2,000 to save the money for an attorney to represent you in a bankruptcy proceeding. And so that's one thing to know. And again, it's going to be a cost benefit analysis about what you're going to gain through bankruptcy, through this relief of debt, and what you're going to lose. And that's going to be a personal decision for every person. But like I said, for those folks who are, you know, the clientele of Alaska Legal Services, oftentimes it just really doesn't make sense. They don't have, you know, it doesn't make sense. It may give you peace of mind, but it's not going to have a lot of financial advantages for you.
Well, how do you get the debt collectors off your tail?
Yeah. So there are protections under the consumer, there are federal protections that prevent debt collectors, are supposed to prevent debt collectors from harassing you, from contacting you. And so you can send them a cease and desist letter, which we have on our website, that you can send to debt collectors to tell them to stop harassing you. And so there are a number of protections. There are debtors protections that extend beyond bankruptcy. But again, they require action by the client or the consumer. The consumer needs to take some affirmative step to bring that into action. And so, again, we've got some resources on our website that help you put on notice if you've got a unscrupulous debt collector who's calling you at all hours of the day or threatening you. Again, there are ways to make that stop.
Okay. Let's go to workers' rights now. There's an enormous amount of the communities are not working now. What kind of resources are available to somebody who's out of a job?
Sure. So right now, again, unemployment insurance is available. So again, on the federal level, both on the federal, state level, unemployment insurance has been, the best way to say it, made more generous. There's additional funds that are going to be available for those who have been, who are out of work due to this pandemic and the pandemic response. And so right now, I would say two things. There is more generous relief available than there had been in the past. The problem that folks are running into at this point is that the state is seeing such a surge in the demand for unemployment benefits that they're having trouble processing the applications and getting folks on board. But you can apply for unemployment benefits online, and you can also do a call over the phone to make that happen. And so our advice to you is just get in the queue. If you have recently lost your job, get in there as soon as you can and keep at it, and that there is some relief coming once they're able to process the claims. And Alaska Legal Services, today we will have a little webinar up on our website that talks with people about how you apply for unemployment benefits and also what you can anticipate the relief from unemployment benefits being for you in your situation. So we anticipate having that up by the end of the day.
It's not at a certain time. They don't have to register for it.
You don't have to register for it. It's going to be just like a little video. Okay. A YouTube video that will be attached to our law help site, and we'll just take people through what the process is and what they can expect.
What's the delay time now? Once you apply and get into the queue, you have any idea how long it is before the money comes?
I don't have any idea at this point. I think my understanding is they're moving as quickly as they can, but they need to get additional staff on, and they're dealing with unprecedented numbers of people applying for benefits.
Okay. You're assisting people with SNAP benefits too, isn't that right?
Yes. So SNAP benefits, for people who don't know, that is their food stamps. And so if you're facing food insecurity, again, you should get in an application for SNAP benefits. And again, if you get on SNAP benefits, you've recently lost your job, if you get on SNAP benefits, you can use those benefits at a grocery store to get the food staples that you need to keep feed yourself and your family. And previously, one of the changes that has happened recently there was a requirement that able-bodied adults without children would not be able to receive SNAP benefits. They could only receive SNAP benefits for a shortened period of time. And now the state has waived that requirement. And so if you're an able-bodied adult without dependents, without children, and you were previously told that you had limited out on your exemption, that's no longer the case. They've extended those so more people can qualify for SNAP benefits at this time. So again, if you're facing food insecurity, you should apply for those benefits as well.
Are there other benefits that people may not be aware of that you would direct them towards?
Sure. So one thing people might have heard about, the economic stimulus payments that are coming from the federal government as a result of the CARES Act too. So the thing to know about that is this is a $1,200 payment that's supposed to be coming for if you're below the income threshold. These payments should be coming out relatively soon to everyone. And the economic stimulus payment. And if you file taxes last year, they will come to wherever you have your
direct
check
deposit. Yep.
Right. But for people who, for instance, if you didn't file taxes because you're below the income threshold of needing to file taxes, you may need to take an additional step to make sure that you get those payments. So you can connect to the site through our website, but also the IRS has a website where you can provide them the information that they need so that you can get the payment. And it's a limited amount. Last week they were telling us you were going to have to file taxes. They've changed that now. You do not need to file a tax form. You just need to provide the information to the IRS to get your stimulus payment.
Okay. Now, since a substantial portion of your work is normally with elder law too, what kind of changes are you seeing in regard to the elderly and what kind of resources they need?
Sure. So we're seeing a lot of our elders that we work with who are in sort of this high risk population for COVID-19, and it seems to be impacting them a bit more than others. And so there are concerns about people wanting to get their affairs in order. They want to make sure that they have wills in place. We are getting lots of questions about how you execute a will if you are socially isolating and you can't have witnesses available. And so again, we've got a classroom on our alaskalawhelp.org that talks about how you would go about making a will, a valid will, and when you might want to do that. Also, we have forms for advanced directives and powers of attorney so that people can make their wishes known, their healthcare wishes known. So if they end up in an unfortunate situation of needing to be hospitalized, that people understand what their wishes are.
That's excellent. Can you talk a little bit about DNR directives and how it's being affected by the virus?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. So that's not something I have firsthand knowledge of.
Okay. I've heard it from a number of people that they think that it's a cause for concern, and we're interested in whether or not you can give them some directive about it.
No, I mean, we do have the advanced directive forms, which is a do not resuscitate form available. And also, so that's available. I haven't heard any stories or that there's a concern, any particular concerns about those at this time.
Okay. Well, I think we covered an enormous amount of ground. And I would again tell you that probably your website is a one-stop shop where if people had specific questions about specific areas we talked about, they could find more information about that, or it will be directed to one of the helplines. So that website, again, is Alaska Law Help, and then you look for the COVID section?
Yes, look for the COVID section, but also there's other useful resources on that too that still hold true even in the pandemic.
So. Okay. Do you have any closing thoughts for people about how they should conduct themselves in regards to taking care of their legal issues over the course of the next month or so?
Well, I think I would say that in taking care of you know, I think that what I would want people to know is that they're, you know, we're all in this together. The laws are changing, things are new, but there is information out there and people who can help them. And, you know, as we're prioritizing and going through what you need to take care of in your life right now, you know, it may be a good idea to think about, you know, really just prioritizing those basic things, making sure that you have housing, that you've got food taken care of, and that your, you know, your family is secure. And, you know, while we take this sort of pause in the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, there is resources and there is help out there, and there are people out there who will help you. And Nicole and Kelsey, thank you both for helping the community here understand a little bit about what's going on and what kind of resources are available to us as we kind of plod through this. So I really thank you a lot for coming back to Kodiak, Kelsey, and for, for joining us here on the conversation. I hope people found it very useful. I did.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. You guys have a good day.
You too. All right. Take care.